Welcome to Sausage on a Fork, a podcast dedicated to the UK's longest-running children's drama programme, Grange Hill. My name's Neil, and in each episode, I'll interview a former cast member about their life before, during, and after their time on the programme. Okay, welcome to the latest episode of Sausage on a Fork, and I am absolutely delighted to say that I have been joined by none other than Neil Rogers, who played Robbo Robertson. Neil, yay! Welcome to Sausage on a Fork.
Oh, very nice to be here. Thank you very much.
Brilliant. Okay, well, what we'll do, Neil, is we'll start the way we start every episode, and if you can tell us how you first got into acting.
So, I've always done judo since I was about seven. I think my mother, being the oldest of four boys, wanting to get rid of a lot of energy. Nice. So obviously the judo's, you know, I'm still a judo coach to this day, but right. It's held me in good stead because I was actually one of the kids rolling around in George's or Alan's characters. He did judo classes with Susie, was it?
Yeah. So did they come to your sort of judo club or school or whatever and say, we need kids for that then?
So, no, I was previously acting before then. I did the first What's It Chris commercial.
Oh, right.
I was doing things like, just a couple of commercials here and there, and they knew that I had a thing for acting. So, so what happened was I was doing bits and pieces. I was doing theatre, I was doing commercials, some TV, and then I got the role in Grange Hill. And schools didn't like us having time off.
Right.
So I was obviously filming Grange Hill in the beginning. There was lots of days filming, so they didn't like me being off. So I ended up going to a theatre school in East Acton and staying with my grandparents in Fulham so I could commute to the both. Uh-huh. Plus, Grange Hill was filmed in White City.
Right.
Which is just the other side of Shepherd's Bush.
Right, okay.
So it was all perfect for me, really. I would even walk to the studio in the morning sometimes and school, you know. Yeah. I'd beat the 220.
Right. So, obviously, you're well known from your time on Grange Hill for being Robbo, who was Doyle's mate. But before you'd played Robbo, you'd actually been in Grange Hill previously in Series 2 as singer's mate.
Yeah.
Obviously, the writers didn't want to give you a name, that one.
No. and that was kind of the start of them starting to give me dialogue and that kind of thing. I think at the time, the producer was a guy called Colin Cant, who I still look out for today.
Yeah.
Because I know the producers and directors move around onto different projects, so I'm hoping to run into him. Uh-huh. But basically, he said, would you like to be on a silver screen? We're like... we've got you as singer's mate, but we're looking to upgrade you to Robbo, which is a more of a mainline character. Uh-huh. So I went, yes, please.
Brilliant. So, singer's mate, obviously singer was a bit of a thief in his time at Grange Hill, and he was the one. He was bullying. He'd be bullying Justin Bennett, and then he nicked the money that Benny Green was accused for. So you were already sort of on the opposite side to Tucker and his boys, which obviously fitted in nicely for when Series 4 came around and you were playing the part of Robbo Robertson, who was, well, I'll say a mate of Doyle. We'll say he's Doyle's mate, but we'll find out a little bit more about that later on. And he was one of more sort of a henchman of Doyle, wasn't he, than a friend? Like, he was always there to try and sort of give Doyle a bit of backup.
Well, I think it kind of reflects the time at that era.
Yeah.
You know, and so I don't think we were ever great cruel kids or anything like that, but we were teachers, definitely.
Yeah.
Just trying to push the boat out a bit more. So I used to rifle through jackets in the cloakrooms and things like that. I think one of the episodes I had a chicken's foot that I went around terrorising the whole cast and the crew as well. So that was a good one.
Yeah, I mean, the first time we see Robbo, well, I say the first time we see Robbo, because Robbo had been played by other people before. I think you were like the third person.
Yeah, there was two other people before me.
Yeah.
So I never got to understand what happened to them and why I got the chance, to be honest, because I couldn't understand why someone would leave Grangehill, being that it was so popular at the time.
Yeah. So when you got the part, I mean, obviously you were you a fan of the program?
Obviously you'd watch the stuff that you'd audition for as well. So it'd give you a bit more background about,
Yeah.
what's happening with the show and stuff like that. I think being that I think I was about 13 when I started the show, you obviously at that age take a lot for granted.
I get you.
So you don't, you're just going through life as it were and not thinking about anything at that age. And I think in the late 70s and 80s, it was a lot freer than it is today, for instance, for a lot of different things. But I mean, I think we had a lot more freedom as kids and a lot more innocence as well. So, like for instance, I used to run around on the underground at the age of 12 and 13, like I owned it, with my mates, So, like, it was just, there wasn't anywhere in London that we couldn't go to, really. So.
And so, like I say, when we first see Robbo, it's when Tucker was entering the competition to design the school magazine cover. And Tucker was convinced that he was going to win. But Doyle said that he wasn't going to win because Robbo was thinking of entering this competition as well. And Tucker says to him, "Well, if your mate's as brain dead as you are, it's going to be a clear run for me." And Robbo doesn't say anything back. He just sort of looks and that's it. It's all it's all left to Doyle to take it to say everything like, and then Doyle sort of bet Tucker that he wouldn't win the competition, and Doyle was so convinced that he, Tucker wouldn't win that. They waited for him after school. I don't know if you remember that one. They're waiting for him after school to sort just to jump him because Tucker's staying back to do his design, his magazine cover. And Robbo says to Doyle, "Look, we've been waiting hours here. We might as well go." And then Doyle says to him, "Where do you think you're going?" And then he says to him, "What do you think I pay you for?" But that's when we sort of discovered that maybe he wasn't really a mate of Doyle. He was, he was a stooge. He was one of the henchmen, because Doyle was quite well off, if I remember, and his dad was a councillor. That's why we said Doyle always seemed to have mates, even though he was just a really unlikable character, wasn't he? I mean, Vince Hall, who played Doyle, played him brilliantly, didn't he?
He was great. Yeah, he was fantastic.
He
He
was
just had
superb.
that, he had that look around him as well, like he was always going to get up to mischief. So I think that in those days you'd be mates, but obviously one would lay it on you psychologically, and he was the one who was in charge of everything. So we followed him, basically.
And off screen, did you get on well with him off screen as well, like?
Off screen, we were really good mates. So wherever we did lots of West End and things like that in
All right.
stage schools, they used to send you to everything, to be honest with you. So there were times where I'll come and see him in different productions here and there, and then we'd have a little chat and then catch up and then obviously go our own ways, so yeah, I mean the last thing I saw him was at the theatre in Hornchurch, I think it was, and he was in pantomime at the weekend, in pantomime doing the season there, and that's when he said, "Look, I think I'm giving up the acting," and I'm like, "No, don't give up the acting, you're good at it. Oh, I don't know whether I could take it anymore." And I was a bit, I'm said I'm sad, you're giving it up, like that. And then that was probably one of the last times I ever saw him, unfortunately.
Now there was a scene in Grangehill, and I don't know if it, I'm guessing it might have caused a bit of contention at the time, because there's a scene where Robbo and Doyle are talking about going to the youth club, which is fairly innocuous. But Doyle is reading a copy of Mayfair. I say reading, there's no way he's reading the copy of Mayfair, but he is looking through a copy of Mayfair. And when you think about that being in a kids' program, I mean, you know, it's pretty shocking, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't think anything of it at the time. In
Right,
fact, it was
okay.
a good laugh,
Yeah.
as far as we were concerned as young boys.
Yeah.
It was quite interesting on set. I think they were trying to hide the magazine from everybody else at
Right.
the time.
Yeah.
But I think because a lot of like soaps reflect the times of the
Yeah.
era,
Yeah.
I think also Grainshill was quite ahead of its time as well. So, for instance, bullying, was a massive thing, and different subjects where, like, having a Mayfair book would have been the forefront of every impish little child's life, that kind of thing,
Yeah, because I, you know, as a lad, you know, obviously teenage lad, when you found something like that, it was amazing. You know what I mean? When you came across something like that, or when someone handed you a magazine like that, it was amazing. But for him to just sit there brazenly, just reading it in the middle of the classroom, I mean, that's Doyle going to another level there, isn't it?
And I think, I mean, I kind of vaguely remember it,
Right.
but it wasn't one of the main scenes that we had to do. So it
Uh-huh.
was kind of, it seemed at the time, moved through it quickly.
Right.
Kind of thing,
Yeah.
but I remember us as lads, we were all looking at the thing
Yeah.
going, oh, God, oh, I'm not saying anymore.
Right, okay, yeah, probably best to leave that one there. Now there was, you know, we talked about Robbo was one of Doyle's henchmen, but there was also another lad, Macca, as well. And there's an episode where Doyle and Robbo are accusing Macca of going a bit soft. And Macca's saying, no, I'm not, you know, like, so Robbo dares Macca to steal, to take a light bulb out and throw it out the window.
As a dare.
Yeah, as a dare. And then it all be that the light bulbs then became a major plot line then, because the Robbo then suggests that they take more light bulbs and they go to the junk shop and sell them to Junkie Mead. Who Junkie Mead, that nickname would have a completely different meaning these days, I think.
Yes, it's true. I mean, they're probably more drug oriented,
Yeah.
but he was a wheeler and dealer of everything, wasn't he? I
Yeah.
mean, he had an antique-y kind of shop where I remember the set very well, actually. It was well done.
Yeah.
And one of his lines is, oh, I'm not usually in the market for light bulbs. Because you wouldn't sell them individually anyway, would you? That would be
No. I
crazy.
mean, Robbo suggests that they go and sell them to him because light bulbs must be worth 35p. So we could sell them for 15p. So, you know, that again, you know, people say, you know, Grainger, I think the storylines haven't dated, but little things like that show you what the time that it was. And so they then came up with this scheme then to take light bulbs out and replace them with the dud ones, so that Mr. Thompson would then have to go and put new ones in, and then they would take the new bulb out and replace it with the. And it seems pretty contrived, but I'm sure the lads knew what they were doing.
Well, that was actually one of my lines almost to Waitham, what you just said then. What are you doing with that? No, don't throw it away. Just take one out, remove the other one. Yeah, it
Brilliant.
was a kind of like that. We also progressed to toilet rolls as
Yeah.
well.
Yeah, because when they go to the shop, I do like this bit, because they go to the shop and Junkie Mead works out that they go to Grange Hill. But Robbo had told him that he got the light bulbs from his brother, who worked for the company that supplied the light bulbs. And Junkie Mead says to them, oh, you're having a, yeah, one of you hasn't got a brother that supplies toilet tissue. Bit of a nudge, nudge there, like, so,
I said, not used ones.
yeah. So yeah, so they say that, oh yeah, my brother does, I'll go and ask him. But in that episode as well, Cathy Hargreaves saw them nicking the light bulbs and she didn't know what to do. So in the end, she told Andrew Stanton. Now, because Andrew Stanton always had he'd always stand up to Doyle, wouldn't he? He always, there was always a bit of an edge between
It's also clean cut looking as well. I
Yeah.
remember him, and also taller than us.
Yeah. He never seemed to take any messing from Doyle.
No.
And he went and
Both
talked.
of them were actually in my stage school as well.
All
It was
right.
at Barbara Speake's stage school, so they were
Yeah.
there as well.
Yeah.
So we used to see each other on a regular basis often, you know.
Yeah. And so Andrew goes to Doyle and says, "Look, you've got to stop doing this because we're going to lose our common room." And but he said they weren't going to. They were going to carry on. They were, because they were making a bit of money. So Andrew said that he'd sell Mrs. McCluskey, which then, as we said heard earlier on, they'd accused Mache of going a bit soft. And it was Mache who, in the end, says to Andrew, "Okay, look, we'll stop. It was us that's been nicking them, but we will stop doing it." Well, at least Mache was going to stop anyway.
Well,
And there's a bit later on where Doyle and Robbo were then caught inside school at lunch break when everyone had been banned from, coming in. They were caught by Mr. Sutcliffe.
yeah.
And they made up a story that they were waiting for a club to start. And when they were asked what club it was, Robbo said the chess club and Doyle said the judo, which, as you've mentioned early on, comes in really handy for you. Because obviously you've done it all your life, sort of thing.
I'm actually doing my fourth dan black belt at the moment.
Wow, really?
So yeah, I've had a good, very good career with the judo. I ended up with a club called Wandsworth Lightnings, where out of the 8 weight categories, we had five national number ones who fought for Great Britain,
Wow.
and that took me to Athens Olympics and five worlds, five Europeans, and two Commonwealths.
Wow.
And I'm still volunteering to this day with a local club called the Craig Ewers Academy, where I'm coaching them in judo and jiu-jitsu and the competition as well. So I'm still
Wow,
doing it.
brilliant.
I'm still heavily involved, you know.
That's brilliant. Yeah. So when they were filming those judo scenes, did you have much of a say in like what people should be doing? Did they come and ask you anything like that?
No, funny enough, when I became a coach in my 30s,
Right.
a guy came up to me who was a lovely guy who's passed away since for some time now, but his name was Roy Inman. Now,
Right.
Roy Inman is a massive person when it comes to British judo, because he was the one that implemented the syllabus.
Right.
And he, not only that, he was in charge of the women's national team, and he had a number of different players that were just phenomenal players at the time.
Yeah.
So, whereas I was testing the other coaches with him, because I've obviously lived and breathed it all my life and I know what I'm doing, he used to say to me, go and test the other groups.
Right.
So, but we had a lovely conversation and he came up to me and says, wasn't you on Grange Hill? He was from Hounslow. And I said, yeah, I was. I was on it for about a few years at least. He goes, well, I was the coordinator for the judo on Grange Hill at the time. And I went, no. And we had a laugh and a joke about it at
Yeah.
the time. But I thought, Christ's sake, I kind of always kind of knew some people are familiar feeling with
Yeah.
you. You're like, and so we had a joke about, you know, what happened on set and some of the judo moves and things like
Yeah.
that. But basically, he was a consultant.
Oh, wow.
And it's funny how that you can cross paths 30
Yeah.
years later. And we both have the same love of judo, you know.
Yeah, oh, that is that's incredible. So then, yeah, so in that judo club that Doyle and Robbo ended up going to,
Yeah.
Doyle was paired up with Alan, and Alan absolutely batters Doyle in that. Which then Doyle then says he's going to get him, he's going to get him outside. And you look at the pair of them and you just think, Doyle, you haven't got a chance there against Alan. He's going to, well, even if there was two or three of you, Alan, he could look after himself, couldn't he? Like. And Robbo actually says to Doyle, look, leave it. You're not going to beat him, basically. But Doyle was Doyle, wasn't he? And he was insistent. And he said, no, I'm getting him after school and you better be with me, sort of thing, he says. So Robbo and Doyle then jump Alan and Susie.
So
yeah.
before George passed away, I sent him a picture of me on his back. And he goes, I'd forgotten about that. And I went, yeah, so had I, but I saw the picture and I thought I'd send it to
Yeah.
you. Had a little giggle online, you know,
Yeah.
like, oh my God, that happened. Yeah.
Yeah, in that, because obviously you've just said there, you ended up on George's back and getting spun round by him and stuff. Was there much choreography that went into that? Can you remember?
Not really. Not really, to be honest with you. A lot of the fight scenes that we did, like for instance, a fight scene I had later was with the Brookies nicking the disco
Yeah.
equipment for the Blue Peter
Yeah.
episode, which was if whoever won it, the writing of that episode was starring it. So they tend to be like when the action, when someone said action, we just went for it,
Yeah.
kids. So I remember on the New Year's Eve one, the disco one, I'd been pushed into a set of doors which had the handles on them.
Right.
So my scream of ah was proper real, so they liked that edginess of the things, I think, the production team. So.
That episode, the one you just mentioned there, that is actually that's the first episode I remember watching. I must have watched it before, but I remember that one, and I think I remember it because it was the Blue Peter one, and because it was Christmas one. And like you've said there, it's the first time, it's the only time Tucker and his mates and Doyle and his mates joined forces, wasn't it?
Yeah, we worked together on that
Ju
one.
just because it was Christmas is the line that Tucker says on that one. Okay, so they realize after that fight, it went after the judo fight, they realize Robbo and Doyle that Alan's left his judo suit. Apologies if I'm saying the wrong words there for what it's actually called. If it's called a judo suit, I don't know. My dad used to do karate and he wore a gi. I don't know what it's called for judo, so I apologize
So
there.
it's called a gi. It's
Right,
called No, it's
cool.
called a gi as well.
Yeah,
So you've
okay.
got it
I
right.
do. I was just there. Yeah, that's just well, kind of my ignorance coming through there. But yeah. So they took this. They took the gi and they sold it to Junkie Mead again. And then Tucker ended up buying it because Tucker wanted one. And then they then realised it was Alan's, so they threatened to go to the police over it. But they got their money back when Robbo and Doyle turned up at Junkie Mead's shop, and it all came out then that it was them that had nicked it. And then there's a scene where Robbo, Doyle, and Macca get one of the girls' bags, and they're messing around as lads do, throwing it round and stuff. But Tucker and Alan turn up and get it back, and it's Robbo that says to Tucker, "What's it got to do with you?" And Tucker says to him, "I just like winding you up, Robbo." What was your relationship like with Todd and George?
Again, I think we were a tight-knit group, actually, for what we did. We used to pretty much hang around the BBC together. The basements were where the dressing rooms are, and there was never any windows in them in the basements. And it was like it was a bit like being Colditz. It's a bit generic and cold, and but we used to hang around a lot and just joke around a lot together. I mean, it was a typical 70s and 80s, really, I think. And sometimes get up to mischief.
I can imagine, yeah. And I have to ask this because I've not really asked this before, but obviously Todd was like the big star of Grange Hill. And did he ever come across as though it had like got to his head or anything like that, or was he just one of the lads?
He was never like that. I think being that we were teenagers at the time as well, he was confident. Definitely loads of confidence, very sure, sure of himself, in many ways. I remember that, having an awe about
Because
his
I would imagine it would have been really easy for him to have got big headed as well. But I mean, I think it's great that the fact that he wasn't. And to be honest, I don't think any. I imagine, as you said, they're all being teenage lads. I don't think you would have let him if he had. You know what I mean? But I just think it's great that he didn't get big headed and he didn't allow himself to become big headed as well.
I think also the workload for him was more massive than us. We, you know, we
Right.
only had lines here and there. So
Yeah.
I always watch people, you know, even today I'm on casualty and I'm watching people struggle with their lines for whatever reason.
Yeah.
We would have mistakes here and there, but they would just cut it and then we reset for number ones again and then off
Yeah.
you go, you know. So you know, I think as far as production were concerned, don't work with animals and kids.
Okay. So then we talked about the, you know, the Christmas special as well. And like I say, it's the first one that I remember watching, and it was written by a Blue Peter viewer. Was that weird? Do you remember that being strange, the fact that it wasn't written by one of your normal story writers? Or obviously they would have adapted it, but
I think where we're familiar on set, to have someone new on set was different.
right.
I remember speaking to him vaguely, here and there, asking about, you know, what he wrote and well done
Yeah.
on winning and that kind of stuff. But yeah, that was his moment to shine. So
Yeah.
like, yeah, it was good.
And he played one of the Brookies, didn't he? Along with it, David Nunn.
Yeah.
David Nunn was the other one who sadly passed away last year, David
Oh, I
Nunn.
didn't even know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then after that, we never saw Robbo again after that
No.
one. Whose decision was that?
I think what happened was that they were phasing in Tucker's Luck
Right.
at the time. So, I mean, we didn't know what was happening with Grangehill. We would never have known that it ran for 33 years in total. And I think we were at the first 4 or 5 years of life, as it were. So you kind of, you know, it's in the lap of the gods kind of thing, whereas producers and directors will just inform you and you go with the flow kind of thing, you
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, series five, which was the next series, hardly anyone like from that year group was in, even the likes of Tucker and Alan, Benny, Justin, they were hardly in series five at all.
Yeah, we were phased out, that's why. So obviously when the show ran for that many years, we were filmed at White City in the BBC Centre, TV Centre, and then after that it left and went to L Street. So all those generations, I don't really know. Funny enough, I was on L Street a year and a half ago where I had a little role on EastEnders.
All right.
So I played a specials officer arresting, what's his name? Ian Beale's son,
All right, PC.
Peter. So I come in and I shave a assault rifle in his face, and his
Right.
reaction was perfect. So
Brilliant.
that was kind of good for me to be on there, just to have a walk around and then see a lot of the old Grangehill stuff is still there, you know.
All right.
You know, the building that they used the school, they still use that for a lot of different things. So that for me was quite good to
Cool.
get to see that side of things, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so then so you left Grangehill then in 81. Or
Yep. I was
did
about
you
18 then.
yeah, did you carry on acting?
Trying to, yeah, I
Right.
mean, try to here and there. I remember, I think, I'm not sure if this was be around the same time as Grangehill before, but I did The Gentle Touch with Jill Gascoigne.
Right.
I did a few other things as well here and there, more commercials, stuff like that. More theatre, I think. We did a lot of
Right.
West End then in those days.
Yeah, so were you doing anything else at the time besides acting then?
No, I think this part of my regret and disappointment was the fact that after Grangehill, you're kind of an 18-year-old running around with no direction, you know.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that I should have probably been managed a lot better, whether it from the stage school that I was in or whether it be by my parents, or just to have a better direction. I think you're an adult at 18, so leave you alone. So I was kind of got a regret with that one that I wasn't managed as good as I should have been, maybe.
Yeah, and I mean, as an 18-year-old, you probably would have told people where to go Anyway, like when you know, as you said there, you're an adult.
Yeah.
Okay, so I use IMDb for my research, which again I know isn't the most reliable of sources, but it has got some acting after Green Hill, but not for about another sort of 10 years or so, where you know you turned up on things like Crime Monthly,
Yep.
The Young Poisoner's Handbook. What I've noticed there, you mentioned about being a policeman before on EastEnders. Quite a lot of your roles are sort of in that sort of area, aren't they? Like
Well, you.
prison officers and things like
Yeah, I'm actually a uniformed officer playing a paramedic on casualty at the moment.
that. Right, okay.
So I've been on there for a few years, and the same kind of thing as Grange Hill has happened, where they've upped my character and given me dialogue.
All right,
So
brilliant.
on episode 30, I've got dialogue in that scene, and I get dialogue here and there because I'm known for being an actor.
Right.
So it's not just the supporting artist. I get bits and pieces on the back of that. So Grange Hill has held me in good stead for a lot of years.
So all these things then, that the things that you've been in, are you there as a supporting artist, or did you like have you had dialogue and things? Because I've noticed things
Yeah.
like Gulliver's Travels and Wimbledon. Is
Yeah,
that
so I didn't. It just varies on the stuff that you do. So on Gulliver's Travels, that was, if I remember rightly, Ted Danson, Omar Sharif, a star-studded cast, which was just phenomenal being a young lad. So the scenes that we were filming were supposed to be Bedlam, the first lunatic asylum. And I play the basket guy. The basket guy was a bit like something like Baldric off
Right,
of
like
kind of groveling, that kind of thing where you're going from cell to cell picking up loads of rubbish, that kind of stuff, So that was a wonderful time. I had a couple of bits of dialogue on that. Which I don't remember seeing in the movie because I've only seen it once when it
Right.
came to go.
Did you work? Did you get to work with Ted Danson and Omar Sharif?
So I was very lucky. Before that, they brought in a lot of extras. I was already in on there with just a couple of dialogues as a passing scene. And my family moved to Los Angeles when I was 18, so I spent a lot of time studying acting there with a Meisner technique
Right.
and a guy called Virgil Fry, who was part of the Brat Pack in those days, which was Dennis Hopper, Peter Fonda, Robert Duvall, Nero,
Yeah.
you name it. It was so I got a lot of experience through him, Virgil Fry, and his classes. So I was on after Grange Hill. I kind of went more to America and did more stuff there, and that's why you don't
Right.
see anything on my stuff. So I was
Right.
on things like Back to the Future 2 and 3.
Wow.
I was on Dick Tracy, only in not as an actor, but as a. I actually ended up working as an agent for a company called Abbott O'Neill Associates, which were based in Hollywood. So I ended up. My job was picking up what the sides are, which is 3 or 4 pages of script, and getting them to our clients. So it was people like Clarence Williams III and Michael Cole from the Mod Squad. But you probably remember Clarence Williams III for being the evil father opposite Oprah Winfrey. I can't think of the film now at the moment. The Color Purple. So for me, it was just a wonderful time being British in an American area around the film industry. It was just phenomenal. And my accent, just I saw Bob Hope, I saw all sorts of different people where I think because they love the British and they love our accents that they just want to talk to you. So it was great, like great experiences anyway.
Brilliant. And then, so we mentioned Wimbledon as well, because obviously that was Kirsten Dunst and Porter, the other fellow whose name I can't remember.
Yeah, that's going back a bit now.
What's his name? Vision from the Avengers, isn't it? It's him, isn't it? Anyway, I mean, so were you a tennis coach in that one, was that? So did you get to work with those in that one?
To be honest, it was a scene coming off the Thames. It was a night scene. So it was freezing. The wind was lashing down the Thames. And the scene was like an establishing shot where the boat is coming into dock up, and then there's a big party, and I was part of the party, and everything that I did was didn't actually come to fruition on the film. So I managed to get a credit for it, and that's it.
Fairly.
Really. So I didn't really do much, to be honest, on that.
Yeah. No. Okay. All right. And then you obviously you've mentioned you've travelled that well-travelled path from Grange Hill to EastEnders as well. I mean, that there's been a fair few people who've done that one. Like, but yeah, and you played the policeman in that. So you've mentioned there a couple of times. So what are you doing at the moment?
So currently, I have a London agent called Media Artist Group, who are part of a Hollywood agency, one of the oldest serving agencies as well. So basically, the old ways of auditioning are gone. So I know used to go and see a casting director or a producer. I used to have a script in my hand and read it. So I kind of like that, doing that. That's the way I was taught. Nowadays, it's the self-tape. And I was doing classes with a guy called Ross O'Hennessy, who was in Game of Thrones, who played Lord of the Bones. And in his classes, we did all sorts of different, whether it be character, but it was all about self-taping, basically, to make the audition strong choices. So on the back of that, I've done all sorts of things as well. Stuff that you haven't seen as well. So I did an Amazon Prime commercial, Thierry Henry, last year, that I think they've just scrapped because I don't think he liked it. So basically, I'm a Joe Blow in my dressing gown watching football, and then there's a big Amazon Prime box by me, and as it rattles, I like kind of look as if to say, "Well, what was that?" And then out comes Thierry Henry with a microphone, and I look at him, and I'm looking him up and down in my house, thinking, "What the hell are you doing in my house?" So he says, no, and he touches my phone, and then we have a watch Amazon Prime football together. And that was a commercial with that. Again, I kind of want to use it on my spotlight, but I haven't seen it yet. But otherwise, I've been pretty much kind of just auditioning and doing different commercials, mainly commercials I do end up. But obviously, I think it's now 6 or 7 years now that I've been on Casualty.
Fair
So
enough, yeah.
it's quite a long time I've been doing with that. And in between, I get self-tape auditions, and it's just a luck of the draw with them.
And you've made obviously you've mentioned your judo as well. And you mentioned earlier on about going to the Olympics.
I
Would that
went to Athens Olympics with a guy called Winston Gordon, who fought under
Wow.
90 kilos. He actually got to the semis,
Yeah.
where he lost on a referee's decision, and then had to fight for bronze, and then lost that, and ended up with fifth. So I was gutted on the day.
Yeah.
I was with a guy called Simon Hicks, who started a company called Fighting Films, who are still prolific to this day. They
All right.
produce suits for national teams and things like that. And he's not alive now, but he was phenomenal. He was ahead of his time when it came to the world of judo. And through him and his experiences, he introduced me to everybody who was anybody in the judo world. And he took me all, I mean, we traveled every weekend pretty much away somewhere, whether it be a training camp or wherever it be, because I did a Europeans, Worlds, and Commonwealths as well. So between all those competitions, I've had a really nice time going around everywhere. So it's I'm still coaching as a volunteer now. I give myself twice a week on Mondays and Wednesdays, and just really to keep my love of it going, really, to pass on to the young. We have got a nice little group of young competition players at the moment that we've knitted a nice group. It's been a And they're all getting results. We had 14 or 15 in the Welsh Open Championships, of which I think we got everybody medalled. I think it was five golds and the rest silvers and bronze.
Oh, brilliant.
So as a club, we're doing really, really well as well. So that's kind of
Yeah,
nice.
but I and as a coach as well, that must give you like immense immense satisfaction when those kids are doing that well as well.
Yeah, it does, but I also have a sense of my, I was going to say I'm 60, 60 next year. And what it used to be living in times through Grange Hill and all the way through the 90s and the 2000s. I watch a lot of the kids now and they tend to be more vulnerable in a lot more areas. I think they're more informed too quickly, too early, too soon, through obviously media and things like that. So a lot of it is I'd like to talk to the kids and make sure that they're okay in themselves. But you know, I'm just fascinated by judo and how that works and how you can get them to get the betterment out of them and to win, basically. And to get over the, a lot of kids, when they come out to fight, it's the fear of putting themselves on the line, which is greater than anything else around them. So I use comedy. I'll work them hard at the side of the mat and things like that, so they're already prepped before they come on and they come and fight well, hopefully. But some of them don't. I mean, even me, I did heavy competition as a kid, you know, as a junior, and even today when I come out and fight, the psychologically, I'm trying to say it in a nice way without, you know, pooping myself really. I feel like, but once I, it's having faith in what you do and your skill. So once you kick off and get off and the fight's gone off, you're in it. You know, you're not thinking about anything. It's like getting in sea swimming or something like that. Like that just takes you out of your brain, and then if you lose, you lose. If and hopefully you win. You know, so.
So just going back to Grange Hill, are you still in touch with any of the cast now?
So I'm in touch from the last Grange Hill reunion, which was my first. So Paul McCarthy and some of the other guys that were in the stage school, Tracy Caswell, we're still in touch on Facebook as well, stuff like that. And Mark, obviously Mark Baxter, yeah, here and
Brilliant.
there, if you know, don't speak often, but you know, I might put something and they might comment on the Facebook.
Well, Neil, we are sort of coming towards the end of the interview, but I have got a few more questions which are all Grange Hill related. So, in the last couple of years, there's been the story of the Grange Hill movie coming out. Phil Redmond has written it. The last guest on the podcast, Kellen Jones, is a co-writer and a producer of it. Sarah Sugarman's going to be directing.
You think that's going to happen?
Well, Kellen Jones seems to think it is, and as I say, he's the one of the producers on it. So
All right.
I'm going
Oh, good
along
to
with
know.
that. What do you think of the idea of a Grange Hill movie?
I think times have changed. I think that I think it's just a different time than the 80s. You know, being in 2023 now, I think a lot more influences and factors would affect scenes and things like that, whether it be phones. We didn't have phones in those days. I think society, it would probably reflect society as it is today more so than, you know, I mean, it'd be nice to have a, you know, play the long lost father of a child that's even more wayward than I was as a kid. That would be great. So yeah, I think there's a lot of changes that I mean, it's interesting you're talking about Sarah Sugarman. Now in stage school we used to sit next to each other. And get up to mischief as well. You
She's
kind of
great,
run.
Sarah. She, you know, Sarah's been on here and she was just, she's brilliant. I love her. Like I'd never come across, really come across her before, but wow, she's great. And so you've just said there, so if you were asked, would we see a return of
I like to think so.
Robbo?
I think that would be great. I was wondering, like, how would they do it? Would they do flashbacks as us as a kid
Brilliant.
when there's another situation with their child happening? I don't know how they would work it.
No,
The same way.
they're not giving any details away whenever I've spoken to anyone. He just won't, just in case I put it on here. I
Right.
imagine that's why, anyway. But yeah, oh no, that'd be great. Okay, so you said you watch Grange Hill. So other than Robbo, who is your favourite character?
I liked different characters for different things, like Lindy Brill singing The Black Widow.
Oh yeah! Oh wow!
I
Yeah.
mean, I remember sitting in the studio watching it. The Black Widow was sitting in the middle of, and the way she sang, because she's in the stage call that we're in as well. So she used to rehearse that in the rooms and that kind of
Right.
stuff. But there were some funny attitudes in the 80s, really,
Yeah.
wasn't there? So some of them, like, think they're, higher than anybody else, because that was kind of the breeding ground as what it used to be, do you know who I am? So some were more approachable than others, basically.
Right.
I remember Donald Waugh being quite posh with his voice,
Yeah.
I talk like this all
Yeah.
the time. So Doyle used to make fun of him, like,
Yeah.
oh, Donald,
Yeah.
just
Brilliant.
wind him up, really.
Yeah. And if you couldn't have played Robbo, because I mean you played Singer's Mate as well, but if you couldn't have played Robbo, which other character would you like to have played then?
I think Gripper had a good role. Mark Savage. We actually had a real life fight in stage school.
Wow, really?
Yeah, like he was boxing and I was judo, so
Right.
we both thought we could give it a good go.
So you started MMA basically, you two did.
Probably, I remember like him picking up a chair, hitting me with it as Barbara Speake came in. What's this noise? Yeah, he's had a varied life as well, I know. So he's had a hard life as well since he's left Grange Hill as well. So a lot of people did, didn't they? They weren't picked up on anything. It was a bit like doing the Olympics and then being dropped. They're like, so.
Yeah, no, but I mean, Gripper was a phenomenal character, and Mark did it brilliantly, didn't he? But yeah, a few people have said they would have liked to have played Gripper, getting that kind of role. Like, okay, Neil, the final question. Why do you think there's still such affection for Grange Hill?
That's a good. I think maybe it's the characters. I think the characters and the storylines probably were ahead of their time for the time. Like smoking. It went on, but actually to see Alan smoking behind the sheds with us and all that kind of stuff. I think some of the issues as well there. I mean, if you remember, I think it was disliked before it was liked because of the. Because of the subject materials that, drugs later was Zammo, and different things like that. But to be honest, it was more current, and that's the reason why. I think that's another reason why. I mean, a lot of people talk to me about Grange Hill and think about the memories and things like that, and identify themselves in their childhood in that time. So I think that's another reason why it's a, well, 33 years the show ran for.
Brilliant.
Massive.
Brilliant. Well, Neil, thanks so much for
My
coming on.
pleasure.
Yeah, you've been on my list for a while. As you say, we've been trying to sort this one for a while, haven't we?
Know.
But yeah, I always say real life comes first, real life gets in the way, but I'm made up that you've been able to come on and talk about your time and your experiences on the program. So
Well,
thank you
really pleased
so.
I can contribute,
Yeah, no, definitely. Thank you so much. It's been brilliant talking to you. And to anyone that's listening, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
And I'll speak to you next time. Cheers.
Have a
Thanks.
prosperous 2024, everybody. And you.
Cheers. Bye bye.
Take care. Bye
Bye
bye.
bye.